Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, and it is now or never. And, you know, what's it going to take, folks? What is it going to take? This is going to be a real pivotal year and an opportunity for we the people to actually start making a stand. And as a matter of fact, hopefully by next week, we'll be talking about, and I'll be, you know, after I go through what I'm going to go through as a precursor with Paul today, because I'm going to dive into this more on Monday, because what I'm actually going to do, folks, is I'm going to, because let me not speak in sentence fragments. Let me wrap up what we were talking about. So we understand the importance of a citizen. And I think that, like I said yesterday, that we as a people have learned and have actually become very complacent and actually dangerously complacent in marginalizing the duty and responsibility of a citizen. Do you not agree, Paul? Or
absolutely.
Okay.
Completely.
And
agree.
And so what we're in a boat that, you know, America had been floating down the river, you know, like on a slow meandering stream, you know, with a little fishing string on our toe and a little piece of grass to, you know, as we're laying on our back, kind of napping and maybe hoping to catch a fish. I mean, we've just been so complacent because we've had blind faith in so many things that has been a part of our society. And one of those things that we've had a blind faith in is the party. We've had blind faith in our government. We've had blind faith in our judicial system. We've had blind faith in, you know, almost everything that, you know, we've just taken for granted that all of these things were, you know, they're all good and we're all good. It's okay. And at a certain point, people, I guess nobody was reading the tea leaves as America started. You know, well, actually, I can't say that. There were people that were very adamant about, hey, this is a very bad move for America, like during the progressive era. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, what's interesting is, you know, how did we get here? You know, how did America get into this position where we no longer have conversations of a citizen? You know, the organization that arose as a response to, you know, this problem regarding the responsibility of a citizen, I'll give you one, was the Oath Keepers. That was the definitely a response of people, some people waking up and saying, hey, you know what? We've marginalized what our responsibilities are as a citizen, especially these people who have taken an oath. And there, this Oath Keepers was really just focused on law keepers, people who were in the military, and those folks who took the oath. Mm-hmm. They didn't do, they kind of jumped over, because I remember when I first attended an Oath Keepers meeting, I immediately recognized the fact that, you know, it's not just people who've gone into service that take the oath. It's every mm-hmm. citizen. If you're a natural-born citizen, your birthright, you were born under the responsibility of that oath.
I can't begin to tell you how many people don't get that. Because, you know, my mother's parents were immigrants. They both came from the Caribbean, and they took the oath. And it means something to them. I bet, in fact, most Americans don't even know what the oath of a citizen is. They should read it, okay, because it's really specific. And I think, you know, one of your promos says that that is we this is implied upon us at birth.
Yep.
Well, we should know that because we're not taught.
Right.
Okay. And I never imagined that citizenship is something that could be lost. But the framers understood that.
The responsibility of a citizen has been lost because kids today, you talk to anybody today and say, you know, do you think that your state can compel you to pick up arms to, you know, to fight enemies, foreign and domestic, within the state? Or, you know, kind of allude to this responsibility that every person age 17 and older, if you're capable, if you're physically capable of, you know, picking up a weapon and firing it, the state can order you to do so.
The concept is foreign.
Absolutely foreign. And as a matter of fact, they're indoctrinating the children today. As we were kind of, I was ending the show yesterday. Our kids are being taught that, you know, they will do anything and everything to shuck that responsibility. They demand that they don't do those things. They demand that they be the subjects of some greater government that knows better than them.
They don't know what they're asking for.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
No idea.
They're being bred into a state of, it's not subjectiveness, it is subjugates. They are basically have been bred into becoming slaves, and they're okay with it.
Yeah.
And so instead of being slaves to the plant, as long as it's not a plantation owner, but the state is far more brutal and far less compassionate than any plantation owner out there. I mean, as cruel as plantation owners could be, it would still be antithetical to kill off your slaves.
Sure.
But to government, when you have more than enough people, it doesn't matter. When all of a sudden when all of a sudden you come on the record and say we have too many people we need to depopulate, and these are the people that are the masters of people, and they have the ability to kill you. That's it. You're
done.
Go ahead.
Have you ever heard the term democide? There was a couple books written, and the term is democide, and what it means is that what it points out is that government is more hazardous to health than anything else. Government has killed more people in the 20th century than have ever been killed by anything else, including plagues,
yes,
and diseases. Okay, it is government.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, go ahead.
No, absolutely. You're absolutely right. Absolutely. And so, go ahead.
No, and I was going to say, and so it behooves us to pay attention to when government steps outside of its bounds. And there has never been, I think, a more perfect system in the history of mankind than what we have in the Constitution. But I think we don't realize what we have, GR. The entire world of free-thinking people does not want America to lose the Constitution.
Right.
Okay. Right. And you've probably heard this. Economist Walter Washington said, if liberty dies in America, it is destined to die everywhere.
Yep.
And so this is our fight, Jared. This is kind of like the last stand.
Yeah, it is. And, I kind of mentioned that this week, that we're in the final war. The Third World War actually began in 1776.
Yeah.
It was the laying out the stage and the battle lines for the third and final war, and it's a political and an ideological war. It's a war against Satan and Christ, or, you know, subjugation and liberty. which is kind of why, and, you know, next week I'll be getting into the scale of liberty and talking about that and that paradigm, because Christ is embodied the purest of liberty. Did he invoke, you know, the submission to, of people that, you know, the threat of being stoned to the adulteress before her for her sin? In other words, he put off the Mosaic law, the law that stood, if thou commit adultery, thou shalt, you know, you'll be stoned, the punishment. And he introduced the concept of repentance and forgiveness. And right. And clearly, it wasn't necessarily whether he forgave the adulteress. He said, go and sin no more.
And before that, he told her accusers, he of you is without sin, let him cast the first stone.
Right, yeah.
And they all walked away.
Okay, so diving into this responsibility of a citizen and looking at what our obligation is, what fundamentally is that ultimate obligation? I mean, you know, you could, if you want to, you can just Google while I'm talking the oath of a citizen. And you, if you really break down the oath of the citizen, the very first part is to basically sever any potential relationship that this new citizen taking this oath has to any potent sovereign state or what have you. And so I hope you're looking it up, because, you know, I think it's time we actually drilled into the oath of a citizen. And so,
I've got it.
Okay, so I will, I'll let you go ahead and do that.
You want me to read it?
Yeah, just start off with the first line.
All right, this is the current oath of allegiance of the United States as it follows. I hereby declare on oath that I absolutely and entirely renounce and abjure all allegiance and fidelity to any foreign prince, potentate, state, or sovereignty of whom or which I have heretofore been a subject or citizen, that I will support and defend the Constitution and laws of the United States of America against
Hold
all
on. You
enemies.
got a little Go bit ahead. For that first line. I hereby declare on oath, and I believe it's on oath and now or affirmation. I think they allow affirmation as well, because affirmation is just a little more legally binding.
Okay, really?
Yeah, it is. See, an oath is based upon the moral integrity. I think on affirmation, it's actually more of a legal process. Anyway, if you actually look it up. That I absolutely and entirely renounce and abjure all allegiance and fidelity to any foreign prince, potent, state, or sovereignty, of whom which I have hereto before been a subject or citizen. Now, let me ask you this. Does this mean that a person in the United States is having to, as a Christian, or, you know, let's say they're coming in from a foreign nation and they are a part of, you know, a Christian nation, are they denouncing their citizenship with Christ?
No, it doesn't. That, well,
because see, that. Actually, when a Christian has a dual citizenship, and it actually works. Because you're a citizen of either the monarch and or the government and a citizen of Christ. In other words, you're a member. I mean, in the New Testament, it talks about now be no more strangers, but fellow citizens in Christ. And so that, but you're not, your laws of the earth are separate. I mean, this is where this paradigm came in. Give unto Caesar what is Caesar's and give unto God what is God's. And, okay. And so we have these obligations of life that we live in. And if we're a subject of a government, we're, as Christians, we either have to, you know, get along, or we need to go somewhere else, you know, and not be in a government that is antithetical to Christianity.
So this oath is an earthly oath.
An earthly oath of governing. Now, let me ask you something. If you are a subject to a theology, where you are a subject of that theology, Islam, I'm going to want to focus on Islam. Does this mean that you are basically renouncing and abjuring your allegiance to that theology?
Well, I don't know the theology that well, but I would, that person would be taking an oath to support and defend the Constitution.
That's that follows. But what they're saying right at the very beginning is they abjure allegiance and fidelity to any foreign prince, potent, state, or sovereignty of whom or which I have heretofore been a subject or citizen.
So here's
in other words, if you're a part of the Nation of Islam, a worldly nation of laws, then you are abjuring your association with Islam completely. In other words, technically, you either abandon Islam in that practice, or you can't become a citizen because you are actually lying under oath. If you believe that Sharia law needs to be invoked in your community, then you are actually violating this very oath. Do you understand what does that make sense, or do you disagree with me?
No, I don't disagree with you. Because Sharia law, as separate law from another what nation isn't?
It is a law that is of a different form of government. Sure. It is a theocratic governing law where the religion dictates the law. The United States Constitution. This was the beauty of this system. The Constitution dictates the law that all people shall have the freedom of religious expression and speech.
Right. And if you have a nation, an idealism that denies that, then it's antithetical to the Constitution.
Yeah, so we have a few members of Congress, and we have other people who are public servants who have migrated from Islamic nations and are active Muslims, and have taken this oath, and they have basically falsely swore to this oath. Because what they then say is that they've abjured, heretofore been a subject of, we're no longer going to be a subject of that state, citizen, sovereignty, and no longer a subject to and citizen, that I will support and defend the Constitution and be a citizen of those laws. That doesn't mean that you have to abandon your religious faith, but if you cannot support the U.S. Constitution as the supreme law of the land against enemies, foreign and domestic, then you are taking a false oath or affirmation. You're absolutely lying in that oath.
Wow. Yes.
And they're mocking us in doing so. Now, you know, that's what evil people do. Evil people mock, right?
Right.
Okay. I mean, you got to be a heartless person to mock other people. And, you know, I'm going to take advantage of you, and I'm going to mock you. Anyway, it's those people aren't good people. We don't want to have those types of people among us.
Okay.
They're nothing but problems. It's like having the enemy within. Which is one of the reasons why, when you really go through even the New Testament, Christ always talks about keeping the enemy out of thy house.
Right.
Which is why they banned Islam in America.
Oh. Okay.
Now, they actually banned all other faiths. But I don't believe all other faiths are necessarily a direct enemy to liberty and the Constitution. They may be competing and may not align with Christianity, but they're not antithetical. They're not demanding the annihilation or, you know, the removal of Christianity from their land. Does that make sense?
Okay. So what's being said here is that... if they come here and they want to be a citizen and then turn around, like we have some elected officials who I believe have spoken publicly that they want to have Sharia law,
yep.
Then they've violated their oath.
Well, you don't even have to be a public servant. If you're actually a U.S. citizen and calling for Sharia law, is that not an insurrection against the Constitution?
Isn't that interesting?
I'll tell you what, the word insurrection has been used to ad nauseum today.
It's been abused to a bit, hasn't it?
Well, I'm just saying it's been the topic du jour.
Right.
How they have these buzzwords of the year, you know, the most popular word of the year or what have you. In politics, insurrection has to be that word for the 2023.
Okay.
And as far as I'm concerned, any person that is calling for the invoking of socialism, the invoking of Islam, it's not just Islam. It is the idea of communism, of bypassing, or the idea of government usurpation of powers. The idea of implementing a social healthcare system without amending the Constitution is an insurrection against the Constitution.
There is, right.
Okay.
The word insurrection isn't really being effectively used.
That is correct.
Right?
Because they're an insurrection against their election system. It's not like they're placing real context, because the only unacceptable insurrection in America is an insurrection against the Constitution.
Okay.
It's not against the party. It's not against, you know, the court system, because if the court system is, you know, embracing or extending its jurisdiction beyond its legal jurisdiction, then it's an illegitimate court.
Mm-hmm.
What is occurring in the court over that matter is illegitimate. They don't have the jurisdiction.
Right.
I know I really come off as an absolutist, and I know I come, you know, some people hear this and it seems like it's really extreme, but folks, this is just, without putting this into that type of connotation, this is a black and white issue. This really isn't, up to subjectivity or these shades of gray that we can inject into this. Well, it all depends. No. You're either supporting the Constitution or you are not.
Right.
And so the whole point that I really, I wanted to kind of emphasize, because we have de-emphasized this, the citizenship and the oath of the citizen. And so, apparently this show is really more about the oath of citizen. So when we come back, I want to talk about what we have to do. And as a matter of fact, this is what we need to be doing in our counties, because I believe it. Well, I'm going to bleed into the break, so let me just forego. I'll be right back after this, folks. Thank you so much.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google Donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so Paul, let me ask you this question. When we look at a citizen, what type of behavior would be absolutely unacceptable for a citizen?
What type of behavior would be absolutely unacceptable? Well, I would say anything that injures the rights of another citizen could be one.
Okay. All right.
All right. So we are, you know, our way of living, our mindset of government is that we're supposed to, the purpose of government is to secure our rights to life, liberty, and property.
Right. Okay. Well, do you understand the difference between a crime of commission and a crime of omission?
Well, yeah, there's something that you should do, that omission is something you should do that you haven't, and commission is something that you deliberately do, correct?
Okay, so an act of commission is something that a person, when they actually do something, then they have committed a crime. So let's put context into committing a crime against your responsibility as a citizen. To distill this down or boil it down, every U.S. citizen has a responsibility to support and defend that Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic, period.
Right.
Okay. So what could a person do that would violate that responsibility? In other words, an act of commission.
Right. An act of commission?
Yep.
Would be to violate their oath.
I'm going to help you through this, because obviously deep in my, you know, this dark mind of mine, or illuminated mind, whatever, I actually see that I see citizens all the time committing acts of commission where they are actually violating their oath. When they go to the ballot box and they vote for somebody that is going to deliberately, they promise that they're going to give you socialized health care, where that is absolutely unconstitutional. They promise that they're going to socialize this. We're going to give you these entitlements. That person that cast that ballot has committed an act against their citizenship. Violated their responsibility as a person who is supposed to defend and protect and support that Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic. And here we have people going into office that are saying, I am going to outright violate the Constitution. They don't actually say it that way, but I'm going to do something. I'm going to give you something that the Constitution does not grant us the authority to do. In other words, nobody's placing this into true context, but that's what's been happening for well over a century.
Right.
And so how is it that these citizens, these people that are going into the ballot boxes are actually allowed to maintain their citizenship?
Your vote is private.
Well, so show me in the Constitution where it is founded, because how were ballots and votes casted in 1789? Was it secret? Was it done by secret? Did you have a right of a secret ballot? Heck no. The reason why people started wanting to have a secret ballot was because they didn't like the idea that, you know, they would be outed for actually voting for a bad person or voting
really?
For absolutely.
Come on, GR. That's where secret ballots came from?
Show me in the Constitution where the concept of a private secret ballot that nobody could find out how you cast your vote, because in those days, they voted orally a lot of times. How do you vote for this? How do you vote for this? Okay, that was recorded. And it was recorded in a book, how you voted.
So that's interesting. So there is, we've got this paradigm. I would say it's an intergenerational paradigm. I've heard it said that your secret ballot is a right. So tell me where that comes from.
So it was an extension of the right of privacy, that you have a right to be secure in your person with your own thoughts, ideas, and so forth. But when it comes to actually your participation in governing processes, there had to be an accountability. They actually wanted to make sure that, because a person today, how can you prove that how you voted was absolutely counted unless you have the ability to go online and see, okay, here I am and here's how I voted. They actually expunged this. We don't even have a record anymore of any way of proving that they had properly counted your vote the way it should have been.
Right.
In other words,
no, you're correct.
It should be on a hard spreadsheet how you have voted on this, so that the numbers could be tallied as to what was the total on this measure, on this candidacy race, and so forth and so on, as it boils down from the local, state, and national races and issues. There is no accountability. The day you take accountability away is the day you can actually start manipulating and playing with the numbers and changing outcomes.
So, okay, here's what may seem like a dumb question, all right? You've got it. How does something even appear on the ballot that is so bad that if you vote for it, you lose your citizenship? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact,
how does it even get there?
Yeah. So, going down that exact same vein, I can't understand why there's no law on the books that says any bill that is introduced, any legislation, any law that is being introduced that would be unconstitutional, the person that submits it for consideration should lose their position.
In a sense, you know, in Missouri, I think we have that. Okay, it's just that it's not being enforced. Do you know what I mean? In other words, our state constitution, I think, has stronger language than Section 3 of Article 4 of the 14th Amendment.
Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, yeah.
Right, okay. And that is, if a legislator violates his oath or her oath, that they lose their position. There's been a lot of debate lately about Section 3 of the 14th Amendment.
Uh huh. Yep.
And in Missouri, I think I have brought up this point. I think it is Article 3, Section 15 of the Missouri Constitution, which says essentially the same thing, but I think the language is stronger. And so what has happened is, you know, just recently, the Supreme Court of Missouri strikes down an omnibus bill that came out of Missouri because you're only supposed to have one issue for one bill. There were multiple issues. Came out of the House with one issue, came out of the Senate with the kitchen sink, right?
Right.
And so what happened when it gets reported, what the news is saying is, well, the Supreme Court strikes down, what was one of these issues? Making homelessness illegal in public parks. That's not what it did. What it did was it told the legislature that you cannot put all of these items in one bill. Okay. And so what happens is, oh, okay, they probably won't do that. No, I think what we need to do is hold the light on these people who did this and apply the appropriate section of the Missouri Constitution and remove them. Right?
Right. So when we look at, this really has become the discussion on citizenship and, as a matter of fact, taking it further into public service, because bottom line, when a person creates a legislative bill for a state that is not within the enumerated powers, then they are literally violating their oath of office. In other words, they're trying to exercise powers they don't have. They've not, those, right. If those powers have not been delegated, you can't make a law regarding that.
Sure.
But most people have ignored the state constitution to their own peril, because this is how states have got all of these laws on the books that were mandated by federal agencies, federal bureaucracies that, you know, the federal government doesn't even have, but the states say, oh, okay, we're going to enforce this federal law. Well,
right.
No, you can only enforce laws that are pursuant to the Constitution. So this is how we've gotten this huge mess. But my point is that every person that has touched these, that have, you know, injected these in for consideration, and every person that has voted for these things, they should be, each time they do that, they stand in jeopardy of losing their citizenship and losing their eligibility of being involved in public service and all of these things. I mean, they should be removed. They should be expunged as a citizen.
You know, what kind of change in the American paradigm is going to have to take to do something like that?
You know, it's one thing. Okay, so I honestly believe that, you know, we everybody deserves the wake-up call, you know, and I, you know, in HR, they call this a first and final. In other words, we cannot marginalize and say you get three strikes. In other words, boy, my three strikes better be really big so that, you know, if I can get away with them, I can really do some things. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, once you're told that, you know, we have, you know, a very specific form of government where powers are delegated, our government operates under a special power of attorney, a limited, defined, and enumerated power of attorney, period. If those powers are not within that power of attorney, within that constitution, then you cannot operate anything that is not enumerated. You try to inject something like the Department of Transportation, then the president, first off, the president is obligated to veto that. And actually, as far as I'm concerned, the president should have actually got, but they had this honor and respect. Oh, well, just because you're ignorant, we're going to accept this. You should get a first and final. You do that again. You introduce a bill that is implying powers that don't exist. Then you're gone.
You're done.
You're no longer a public servant. And if you are out there promoting unconstitutional behavior of government and these other things, or becoming a lobbyist for that type of stuff, then you lose your citizenship and you can't even vote anymore. We have to start taking this stuff seriously.
Right?
Does the kingdom of God take its citizenship seriously?
Oh, it sure does.
And so, but but they do understand people make mistakes. We, you know, I honestly think that we have to have some level of forgiveness and, you know, and basically, you know, allow people to say, okay, you need to learn, and maybe you shouldn't be in office at this point because you're just too ignorant. Okay. And we're going to kick you out. And then the only way you can get back in is you have to pass a test and prove that you really understand this. We should have those standards anyway. We should not allow just anybody to be in office. Does that make sense? I mean, sure it does. Should actually be able to pass a test, you know, that you understand the Constitution, that you'll be able to function in the capacity. If you're a sheriff, you need to understand how to enforce and what the laws are that would be constitutional and so forth. If you're a legislator, you need to understand that you can only make laws within those enumerated powers. In other words, we should have these standards for our public service. And you know what? We just let any idiot go in there like Obama. Look at what Obama had done. And not just him. I mean, Wilson, yeah. all of these evil men that have done such damage. Anyway, right. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
You know, I was going to say, I mean, you know, we pass it. We have to pass a test to show that we're competent to get behind the wheel of a 2-ton projectile, you know, the typical, you know, that drives on the public roads, right? Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? A legislator or a group of legislators can do far more damage than someone can do in a car.
But this is the same thing with the citizen at the ballot box when they actually cast a vote for unconstitutional things. Look at, you know what? Every time you have a citizen in a state in this republic that is voting on a citizen initiative, they're actually violating their oath of supporting the Constitution because legislative powers are vested in our legislatures. And if we don't like our legislatures, then we actually have to hold them accountable. But nobody's been teaching them this. And this is how because they've made us ignorant and, you know, said, well, because your legislatures don't do this, we need to have citizen initiatives. We need to move closer towards a democracy. Are you kidding me?
Every state has citizen initiatives. They probably ought to be, if they're going to have them at all, they should at least be changed to be Republican in form, like, you know, a majority or a supermajority of counties, right?
Right. And so, as far as I'm concerned, you know, we have to start educating people. And so, let me ask you this. What is the best mechanism of educating people about our system and so forth and moving forward today? In moving forward, as I started on Monday, I created this imagery using the color-coded Constitution that, you know, here is a document with all of these markings on it, the Constitution that's been highlighted. Every part that's being violated are the infractions thereof. Then in addition to that, I went further and I said, okay, you've got these direct violations. These parts of the Constitution are being violated. But that doesn't cover the assumptions of powers not delegated, right?
Right.
So that means all these different departments, all of these roles, responsibilities, powers, and properties the federal government has assumed that are outside those enumerations in the Constitution. So those are equally a part of the problem. This is why, you know, when we look at what do? How do we reel in government? How do we actually, you know, because this goes to that, you know, a non-binary view, you know, projection. Here are the seven paths, right? And I talk about the status quo of the parties and how the parties have been, you know, culpable in exacerbating the problem. The court system is absolutely corrupt. It is exacerbating the problem just as well. And so, you know, and we're looking today in, or I should say next week, I'm going to be diving into this. The you know, to convene a convention or not convene a convention. And I'm going to drill down into this because you and I, the last thing we covered last year was the process of interposition. Basically, republic review and interposition is the only process. I mean, if you're actually going to adhere to the concept and hold full accountability to, you know, the supreme law of the land, the only process to do this is republic review, to audit that compact against the federal government and audit the compacts against the states and against your counties. In other words, we have to actually, you know, do what I have done in identifying here are all the violations and here are all the powers you've assumed that you have no authority to. And here are the laws that you created that you had no authority to do. I mean, it's not just assuming powers. It's like, oh, well, you know, we have the ability to institute marriage and determine, you know, who can be married. No, you don't. Mm-hmm. So as we get our arms around the problem of all of the government tyranny, now we're right. actually going to allow, you know, two, I'll just say, imbecilic organizations that are absolutely disingenuous, the conventionites and the anti-conventionites, because there's different groups that are part of this greater organization, those who are against the convention. I mean, I myself am against the convention, but I'm absolutely against these anti-conventionites and what they're calling for and the things that they're saying. So I have to drill into this so that everybody can see for themselves what the real truth is. As a matter of fact, if you want to participate in this next week, I'm actually going to read the commission letters from the separate states. Mm-hmm. Or I'll at least review them at enough detail so that I'll cover every single letter that, you know, when the states basically said, okay, you're going to be our delegates. Here is our guidance for you to go serve us in the Philadelphia Convention in 1787.
And didn't you and I do that already?
No, we never did that. We never actually did that. But this is the time to do it, because this is where these teams of organizations pull together and they steal the dialogue and they make everybody believe this is the only two options. Either we right. convene a convention or we don't, and they nullify. We just nullify this stuff. And neither of those paths, because like I said, we concluded, you know, the year on proving that nullification is absolutely the wrong path. It is just as bad and more destructive.
Right.
I've even gone as far as to say an Article 5 convention or an amendment to the Constitution is sometimes appropriate, but never at any day, any point in the life in this republic is nullifying a law appropriate. Mm. In other words, a single state nullification and remaining in the Union, is that ever appropriate? And that's not my words. That's Thomas Jefferson and James Madison, or at least James right. Madison speaking for Thomas Jefferson, and I'll let him do that.
Right.
So my point is that, you know, we have to really lay out, and that's my whole point, is I have to lay out the irrefutable argument that if you think this sovereign citizen movement, so this past week was really focused on that, if you think that's the legitimate path, and I'm going to revisit this, folks, and like I said, I've invited Paul to, you know, dive through the documentation and go, aha, oho, here are five documents that clearly point out that these people are operating under a magistrate paradigm, which we do not have. When they ratified that Constitution, said we're moving forward, we've instilled a bottom-up Republican form of government where truly the sovereigns at the bottom level, or I should say the foundation of this government, operates by we the people and that government which we directly institute. That government that we directly institute is our county, our local government. Mm-hmm. The state government is instituted by delegations from our instituted governments, our counties. The federal government was instituted by delegates from that state government.
Right.
And so That's how a Republican form of government, and it's always done through representation or delegates, except at our local level. And it's still, even at our local level, the Constitution and all of that should be done by delegates throughout the different counties. But basically, you know, it's not like I'll just call it a wild, wild west where, no holds barred, but, you know, you need to have some decorum. You need to have, you know, but it needs to be open so that the entire county can self, you know, create its self destiny. This is, we demand liberty. And bottom line, if you're going to be a county in this constitutional republic, that's the only path you can be, or you can't function. You become antithetical to the Constitution, and that can't exist. That's why all of these pockets that are practicing Sharia law, they're actually mocking our system. And we can't allow that. This is why, you know, if they can't, you know, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. If you can't abide and incorporate and become a part of the system because it ideologically you're wired, hardwired not to, then why are you here?
Yeah.
Other than to undermine us and destroy us. Come on, let's just be honest. People that want to be here and participate in the life of liberty, those people deserve to be here. And I believe, and this is why I say, God's plan for global governance is right here in this Constitution. I believe that the people of the world want liberty. They don't want to be subjugated. The only people that are in the mind of subjugation are those people who don't trust the other ideas and the other people. I mean, they become the rulers of us, and they're very jealous of anybody else's thoughts or anybody else's ideas. Anyway, I really appreciate you coming back, and I'm glad we were able to go through this. And I guess for our final closing out for the week, you know, it's apropos that we really do focus on the citizen, the citizen's responsibility. Because moving forward, as citizens, what are we going to start doing if we don't start holding these organizations that are actually causing the problem? They're actually contributing to the problem. If you're not a part of the solution, then you're a part of the problem. Because all you're doing is wasting our time getting us to look at what, this is what you say. You keep on saying this, and that doesn't fly. So shut up and go away. I'm sorry. I hope everybody understands. I prostrate myself all the time because I know I have a very hard head, but I have the best intentions, but I sometimes say things that offend people, and it's not my intent to do that, but I'm trying to help people realize that there is an accurate paradigm of our system. There's an accurate paradigm of our government, and we shouldn't be competing with these failed ideas or these things that have been proven wrong, folks. And so with that, thank you so much, Paul, for coming on board with the past 2 days. It's been an open idea and an open exchange of ideas. I really appreciate it. Folks, when we come back, I'm going to dive into this concept of what we're going to be struggling between the conventionites and the anti-conventionites, and hopefully Paul will be back. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in
in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.